Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website, foundation@hearstcastle.com, to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission. The rural town of Shipshawana in northeast Indiana is home to both Amish and Mennonites. The genesis of the Anabaptist movement started in Zurich, Switzerland in 1525. The Anabaptists demanded freedom from state control. Additionally, the term Anabaptist means to rebaptize voluntarily as adults at a time when the state mandated infant baptisms. Following imprisonments, torture, and executions of members of the sect, the Mennonites started migrations to the New World in 1683, spurred by William Penn's invitation to create a peaceable kingdom in the New World. The Amish are the more conservative subset with an avoidance of modernity, specifically avoiding being connected to the grid and reliance on modern transport such as the automobile. While Mennonites utilize autos and modern electric conveniences, and the subset of Hutterites adhere to living communally. Come along and join correspondent Tom Wilmer as he explores Shipshawana, where he visits with Andy Rohr with Blue Gate Enterprises, followed by docent Jerry Beasley at Menno Hoff Interpretive Center for the Amish Mennonite story. Next up, we stop in for a visit with Isaiah Miller at the family-run Wooden Basket Company, T-Berry Wood Products, followed by a visit with Lauren Yoder at Silver Star Leather Company.
Hi, my name's Andy Rohr. I'm the Vice President of Sales and Marketing for the Blue Gate Group, and we're in Shipshawana, Indiana.
Shipshawana is very different than pretty much anywhere else in Indiana.
Yeah, it's a very unique culture. Whenever people come and visit, they always say there's just a little bit of a different rhythm here. It's relaxing, unique, and a lot of things, fun things to do here.
It's a great place for people that are interested in arts and crafts, woodworking, and picking up a new breadboard or whatever. It's really amazing some of the neat crafts that are made here.
Yeah, it's a really entrepreneurial community, and so a lot of the Amish, they do these things in their homes, and they have these things available for sale, and just really high quality, well done things, and just beautiful.
And incredibly reasonably priced, too. I'm shocked.
Yeah, I'm from here, so I see the prices, and they seem pretty normal, but that's, I hear that a lot, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll try double in some places.
Yeah, we're very happy to have them here, and we definitely benefit from that.
Talk to us about the culture here, the bigger picture. You have Amish, you have Mennonites, mm-hmm. And I found it fascinating that there's this acceptance and there isn't this rivalry or, you know, we're better than thou.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the faith and part of the culture is that we're, you know, we're all God's children. And they all practice their faith differently, but they all get along very easily. And you'll see that play out. They play their faith out in their work, in their homes, and how they treat each other.
Mm-hmm. What I love is little carriages going by, you know, just this time warp. Yeah. Talk to us about that dimension.
Yeah, It is a little bit different when folks come from a big city and they first get here and they start encountering the buggies on the road, especially the buggy lanes. They're a little bit, you know, they're a little confused about that. Sometimes folks won't pass buggies, even though they're in the buggy lane, because they just don't, they're not used to it. But once they get used to it, it's a really nice feature. And as you're walking down the road and you see the horses come by and they're clip-clopping, and it makes it a, it helps with that pace and that feel of just being comfortable.
And I went on a buggy ride yesterday, and it was fascinating that the horse was not spooked by any cars that came by. So they kind of understand the drill, right?
Yeah, and that comes with training. Fresh horses, you will see sometimes Amish have to work with them to get used to the cars and things. And but once they get used to it, they're fantastic in town. And they, as you saw, there's buggies in town all the time around here.
And then you must have this whole support dimension, like you would have a saddlery and a bridlery.
Absolutely. There's leather harness workers, you know, they horseshoers, and then there's even some buggy makers in the area who you can go out and see them actually how they make the buggies, and really a fun community.
That's really cool. And it's a very dynamic community. I mean, we went to a play last night here that the people I was with, they go, this is like off-Broadway quality, literally.
Yeah, it was... The musicals are a wonderful way for us to share the culture and help uplift people. They're family friendly. They're meant to encourage and uplift folks. All positive messages.
Are they written and produced by local people?
Yeah, they're actually Bluegate produced musicals. They're sometimes adapted from books, sometimes written by folks in our company. And then we work with folks down in Nashville to get the sounds right and everything as well.
That's pretty impressive, because it really is. I mean, you could go on a tour with your troupe around America.
We actually have a couple theaters that perform the musicals across the country. And
really?
Yeah, and we're actually getting ready to film one for distribution on a streaming service. So we're really excited about that.
That's really cool. Tell us a little bit more about the economy here and what somebody would find. Is it known as an arts destination?
Yeah. Shipshawana is a town of about 600 and a bushel people, but we host over 2 million people here a year. So very tourism-based. Mm-hmm. Folks can come in. There's lots to see and buy and experience. And we do our best to keep the small-town feel but provide those big city amenities that they want. The hotels, the restaurants, the shops all try to scale up to meet that demand.
Talk to us about your legendary flea market. That's incredible.
Yeah, the Shipshawana Flea Market is really what started the whole thing here in Shipshawana.
Attracting outsiders.
Yeah, made it a tourist destination. It's started with just an auction in the 50s, and then more and more vendors set up, and now we have over 1,000 vendors.
1,000.
Over 1,000 vendors on Tuesday.
It looks like the size of an airport.
It's amazing, and... yeah, people will love it. If you're looking for everything from furniture to socks to perfumes, you name it, we've got it.
So I assume it draws vendors from across the state, too.
Absolutely, yeah. Nationwide, really. We have folks that come from East Coast, West Coast, and very variety of stuff. We even have a gentleman, his name's George, he hand-paints signs right there. Oh, it's amazing, yeah.
When does it take place? Is it weekly?
May through September, Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
That's really cool.
It's one of those things that folks, you know, they come in and they're not sure what to expect. When they get there, it always surpasses their what they thought they were going to see.
How about a couple of the other number one, number two draws, why somebody should come here?
Sure. Well, I think Menohoff is a great draw. People always have questions about the Mennonite and Amish history and their culture. And so Menohoff is our Amish History Museum. It does a great job of explaining the history and the culture and tries to give people a little bit of background so they know what's going on. The Davis Mercantile downtown is fantastic. It's three floors of just some of the best local stuff that we have. Has a 1912 carousel inside of it for the kids.
Wow.
Really cool little thing there. And also some great food there with JoJo's pretzels.
Those pretzels were great.
I'm glad you enjoyed them. Yeah, they're one of my favorites, mm-hmm. too. And then there's over, two to three blocks of other specialty stores. And then, of course, the Blue Gate downtown is kind of a cornerstone.
Explain, what is the Blue Gate?
The Blue Gate is mainly a restaurant. That's how we got started. Reek Secker's our founder, and he started the Blue Gate with 50 seats, and it grew and grew, and now we're up to a 750-seat restaurant, and then the theater's upstairs in that same facility.
That's really cool. You could almost have a town hall meeting there.
Yeah, it's a great facility, and it's centrally located, and we try our best to make people feel welcome.
The Blue Gate is probably one of the anchor businesses in the community. Here we are at a Blue Gate Inn a mile away from the mothership.
Yeah, so the Blue Gate Garden Inn is our newest venture. It's a beautiful hotel. We try to keep the country ambiance but still provide the big city amenities that people want. Along with that, right next door, we have the new Performing Arts Center, which is a 1,500-seat venue. We have concerts from everybody from Lyle Lovett to Trace Adkins to a lot of gospel shows, so Southern gospel shows.
That's really cool. Yeah. So a little tiny town. That's a big draw.
Yeah, it's amazing. We actually, this last year, we actually got nominated for an Academy of Country Music Awards, one of the best theaters in the country. So we were really honored with that. We had no idea that we were up for that, and we were just honored to be on the list, really.
For the tourist first time, do you have a tour guide that you can sign up for?
We have a number of local companies that do that for individuals, and then the Blue Gate provides that for groups. For 12 or more, we can provide a guide for them.
So that's probably recommended, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of those ways to get the back behind-the-scenes things.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you want a behind-the-scenes tour. Yep.
And especially, there's a lot of trepidation of approaching a Mennonite or an Amish, because you don't want to kind of disturb them, and you know they're probably bugged all the time by tourists, and so that would be a way to have that kind of calling card entree.
Yeah, a lot of the folks that we work with are very comfortable answering those types of questions, but as you, I think you felt, the community is very, very friendly, so sometimes just waving at somebody or just saying hi is enough to get a conversation started.
Our server last night in the restaurant, she said she was doing something where you would come to her house for lunch.
Yeah. It's part of that entrepreneurial spirit. They can go take a buggy ride out to a farm and do dinner in a home. There's a couple of places around here that do that. Really a great experience.
That's really cool. Okay, your turn. What are you most proud of? What would you like to share that we haven't talked about yet? Okay, if I showed up first time, first day, here I am, and we got a this afternoon, and that's it. Where do you take me?
Well, I obviously like you to do lunch at the Blue Gate. I think between our fried chicken and our pie, you're going to be a happy person when you leave. Then I think just shopping around Shipshawana, getting that Norman Rockwell hometown feel of the town is great. And then I definitely want you to get out in the local community, take a short drive out in the country. It doesn't take that far out from Shipshawana to meet those Amish businesses, see those places. And of course, if we have some time, we definitely want you to visit Meadowhof and learn a little bit more about the culture.
That's really cool. To learn more about your world, about the Blue Gate, and about the town, where would you direct somebody?
Our website's thebluegate.com. Super
That's
easy.
Rocket science.
Yeah, and it's has links to a lot of our partners there for folks to find out more.
And does the town tourism entity have a website?
Yeah, visit shipshawana.com, and they do a great job of helping you understand when and where to visit. Sorry, and my name is Andy Rohr. I'm the Vice President of Marketing for Blue Gate Hospitality.
I'm Jerry Beasley. I am the executive director of Meadowhof, located in Shipshawana, Indiana. I've been here approximately 12 years. I enjoy every day of my work here at Meadowhof. We are a 501(c) organization, an outreach of the area Anabaptist church community.
Does it include the Amish and the Mennonite and the Hutterite, everybody?
Yeah, all of the Anabaptist groups are represented here in our story. Our board is made up of members from the Amish, Old Order Amish, the Beachy Amish or Plain Community, the Conservative Mennonite, and the Mennonite Church.
To begin with, define the difference between Amish and Mennonite.
Primarily, it is a lifestyle that and a number of convictions that the Amish have that is not shared by the Mennonite church. The Amish are plain in their lifestyle. They do not participate in technology advances in all cases. However, there are some Amish communities that do use solar technology as well, especially if it's involved in a business. And they make arrangements where the use of those items do not violate their own ordinance, which is their rule or religious conviction. These items can be used in those areas with the intent of not having them creep into their personal life and become an element that takes away from their spiritual convictions and their lifestyle. They're committed to living a simple life and to spending an adequate amount of time with their family, and their hope is not to have these worldly activities come in and take their attention away from those.
Explain the absence of automobiles and the utilizing of horses and carriage.
I'm not sure I can explain that to you completely, but it's a good example of not wanting to get caught up into the world race activity level. And so using a horse continues to challenge them with some work that wouldn't be involved in the automobile. Also, as you might have heard, feel that it is a reasonable way to transport the family and get around today. The cost of an automobile and the availability of activities and travel would be significant if they were not using the horse and buggy. It would encroach on their daily life more than they are comfortable with. And beyond that, I think it would probably require an Amish bishop to give you a better explanation.
I've noticed the Amish riding around town on bicycles.
Yes, bicycles are acceptable. There are, in some cases, I think the electronic bike or the e-bike is acceptable because it uses a battery operation. It's not attached to the grid. I think it's fair to say the Amish community and leaders are committed to staying away from being reliant on the grid. So e-bike, especially in the case of aged individuals, makes life a little more tolerable.
So that you're seeing those show up here?
We are seeing those in this area. Mm-hmm.
Talk about education, higher education. I spent time with the Mennonite community in Tennessee, and even they were saying they don't encourage their kids going to college.
Well, I think we would all agree that when we go to college, we all face a variety of different experiences and information overload, or certainly information that we hadn't always experienced.
Could it also be temptations?
It could be, absolutely. It could lead to temptations, it could present temptations, but also could confuse individuals with just being hearing things that had in the past been presented in a different light. I'm not sure that anyone could say or would say that education in its sense or purest sense is bad.
Right.
But when you turn your child over to a college, you do to a large extent lose control over what they're exposed to and how they're exposed to it.
And that dovetails and loops back to one of the essential premises, which is sense of community,
sense
correct?
Sense of community, absolutely. Community is extremely high priority for the Amish. It's also a high priority for the Anabaptist faith community in general. We see each other as brothers and sisters, and we want to make sure that the needs of our brothers and sisters are met.
Define Anabaptist and how it's kind of the overarching of both Mennonite and Amish.
The term Anabaptist means rebaptizers. We believe that individuals should be adults and make a decision to be baptized on their own, not baptized as infants or baptized without their own decision.
And wasn't that one of the major breaks and causes of conflict in the old country in Europe.
Absolutely. It was the, I would say, the primary issue among the Anabaptists, that they could not accept the fact that, the fact that the government would mandate baptism, or that it should be our infants that are baptized.
So right now we're in a town, a Mennonite Amish town, right?
Well, I think people do see it that way from the outside. There are many people here in the Shipshi area, the Elkhart County, that aren't Mennonite. But a lot of people do refer to Shipshi as an Amish town or a Mennonite town.
The demographic is probably the dominant demographic.
It would be certainly up there. I couldn't tell you what the breakdown to non-Anabaptist versus Anabaptists are, but Elkhart County is one of the larger population centers for Anabaptist families.
What do most people do for employment?
Well, we are known as the RV capital of the world. We make a lot of cabinets and a lot of wood items. I think it's fair to say that Anabaptists have a reputation of being very industrious. They are good business people, and they know how to use resources carefully. So I think that all plays together to make us perceived as a successful community and industry. RV would be the dominant industry in the Shipshi area, as well as Middlebury and Elkhart, Goshen.
And furniture?
Furniture is also big. We have a lot of independent furniture makers as well. We have some larger companies that ship all over the world.
Mm-hmm. The population of the town is about what?
Shipshewana, I believe, is less than 1,000. I'm not sure the latest number of the population. I've heard it said that it's around the 500 mark of people who live in what would be considered the Shipshi area, and that may be overstating it. It's a small community.
In addition to manufacturing trailers and furniture and whatnot, is agriculture still a dominant?
Agriculture is big here. There's a lot of farms. The Amish farmers are typically not the real large farms.
But part of that is because of absence of technology.
Absolutely. And then the Mennonite farmers, though, would be large farmers. Many of them have dairy farms or
because they can use gasoline-powered equipment.
Absolutely, yes. And they produce a lot of crops and enjoy the lifestyle that comes with farming as well.
And again, for transportation, an Amish person would not have an automobile, correct?
That's correct. Now, they can hire a van to transport them when necessary, inclement weather, a distance issue, any number of things or reasons, medical care. They can actually hire a driver, and there are a fair number of people in the area that actually offer that service.
And how about school field trips?
School field trip, if they're in a public school, the Amish children can go along on the field trips. If it's an Amish school, my understanding is that they can also hire a van and transport the children to a field trip, as well as the adults that go with them.
And talk a moment about your life and your faith and how you came to be here.
Well, I was not born Mennonite in the Mennonite family. I actually was born in Alabama. Mm-hmm. I joined the Mennonite church after I graduated from high school with the intent of changing my life course. I was raised in a Protestant church, Protestant community. I had an alcoholic father and was not interested in seeing that perpetuated. So I was seeking an opportunity to change my life. I found that in Mississippi, of all places.
Was there one thing that attracted you?
Yes, there was a spirit in the friends of mine who were in the Mennonite church that I desired to have. I was relatively successful in the high school social network, but there was something missing in my life, and I thought I could see it existing in the Mennonite friends that I had. And so I pursued that, and it wound up leading me here to do alternative service back in the 1968-69 period, and have been a faithful member of the church ever since.
So you're a
conscientious objector. I was. My dad was actually a 27-year veteran of the Air Force, I was classified as 1A in the draft system. I had to request a change in status, did so, was granted the change in status.
How did your dad feel about that?
You know, it was interesting. My dad said, that's the reason I did what I did, so you can make choices without having to be forced to do something you don't believe is right. I couldn't ask for a better response.
Yeah, that's great.
He didn't seem to dwell on that and think through it. He just responded that way.
Respecting.
I absolutely do. Yeah, I appreciated his sensitivity and understanding, and brought a whole new level of respect for him and his thought process.
So you settled in here, you never left.
Married a lady here. We've celebrated our 50th anniversary. We have children and grandchildren, and we're all part of the faith community.
Mennonite.
Yes.
How many Mennonites are here, roughly?
In Indiana, I believe we have approximately 60,000 Mennonites in this area. A little difficult to keep a number current, as you might imagine, because we do the best we can when we're counting, but I do believe it's in the 60,000 range today.
And outside of Pennsylvania, this is probably the number one demographic region?
Well, actually, Pennsylvania is first. Holmes County, Ohio, which is another highly populated Anabaptist community, or concentrated with Anabaptist families. And Elkhart County would be the third most populous.
And again, the Amish and the Mennonites, they get along greatly, interwoven. You would never know from the outside a difference.
You wouldn't know from the outside. There's some issues at times, but nothing.
What would be an issue?
Well, if an Amish individual decided to leave the Amish church, that could be an issue if they were out and joined another church. The Amish are very respectful when an individual leaves them and joins another church. During the period where they're not connected to a church, they're cautious and concerned about the individual's future, for sure.
Is there shunning that still goes on?
The Amish still practice shunning. As you know, if you saw and read, that was put in place actually to help the individual, not to hurt the individual. And that is a biblical principle. And the Amish, as far as I know, still practice shunning.
If you had to sum up your life experience, what are you most proud of having made this life course for you?
Well, just to respond, we're not to be proud. add that caveat to my comments here. What I'm most satisfied with about the Anabaptist faith is I believe it most clearly represents Jesus's teaching and thinking and his own lifestyle of the options that I had before me. So I am really pleased, and I hope my children and their children will continue to live by the Anabaptist principle.
Do you ever go on holiday and travel around?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. We take vacations, and Amish take vacation. All of our Plain Church communities take vacations and travel. In fact, it's amazing how well-traveled many of the Amish and Plain Church, as well as the Mennonite community, is.
Are there any popular getaways that are you hear?
I'm sure there are. Sarasota, Florida is sort of a melting pot for summer vacation, Pinecraft specifically, in the case of the Amish community.
Let's talk about where we're at right now for a moment.
All right. Mennelhof is a organization. We are classified as a museum. We were actually the result of an outreach decision by the local Plain Church and Mennonite community. We were put together and constructed during a frolic, which pulled from the local community people who were skilled in constructing a facility like this.
Define frolic.
A frolic is when you gather together and do something constructive. Usually have food involved and visiting, but you all participate in the work.
This was a barn raising.
You're exactly right. Now that it could be construed as a barn raising.
And it's a giant barn.
It is a big barn.
And it went up real quick.
It went up in 1 week. The structure was actually completed with volunteers, and there was a overseer contractor kind of individual to help people know what to do, as well an architect was involved in the design. Came together in a week, and then it took about 2 years to equip it with the displays and the technology to support the displays.
I heard something about this being a tornado shelter.
It could be a tornado shelter, I think. The beams that you see as we sit here and talk are large oak beams. There are no nails in putting this construction together. It was all put together with pins and knee braces. And you can see the pins sticking out from the knee braces, the joints there. And that makes it a very, very strong building.
Are those steel pins?
No.
They're wooden. Wooden.
They were green pins at the time. And yeah, they expand over the years and get tighter instead of loose.
So to learn more about your world.
Okay, yeah. To learn more about us, you can call Mennohoff.
Spell that.
That's MENNO-HOF. You can reach us at 260-768-4117. We are there on the web, and you can Google Mennohoff, and we'll be there. My name is Jerry Beasley. I'm the executive director here at Mennohoff, and look forward to having you.
Jerry, thanks for sharing.
You're welcome.
My pleasure. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Indiana.
We're at T-Berry. I'm Isaiah Miller. I'm one of the sons. My dad owns the business. We make wooden baskets, and they're a little bit different than most baskets in the fact that they're cut to shape instead of being bent to shape. I guess what started the business is that dad had a mill, and mom would take his scraps, and she put patterns on them for jigsaw puzzles, and that kind of is what started it. We sold them at craft shows, and we slowly transitioned into baskets. We still make puzzles, but it's mainly baskets now.
Distribution, do you sell them wholesale as well as retail?
We sell some wholesale, but mainly retail. We have three locations locally here in Shipshawana, Indiana. We have our own store right where everything's made. We have another store about 4 miles from here. Then we have a booth at the Shipshawana Flea Market. We sell a lot online, on our website, on Etsy.
Originally, your dad sourced the lumber, the logs, locally, right, regionally. Yep. Do you still get your raw material locally?
Yeah, there's a mill about 3 miles from here where we get all our native wood.
What are your favorite wood species to use?
We use a lot of cherry and walnut. Like I said, we get all of that locally. Then we use a lot of exotics, like we use padauk and wenge from Africa.
And those are for little accents because it's so expensive, right?
Yeah, that's only accents. And that's from a mill about 30 miles from here. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have a little store here too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get bus tours through our location here. We give tours. And then they'll stop in our store. It's a little gift shop, and yeah.
And on your baskets and whatnot, what sort of seal coat do you put on them?
So we use boiled linseed oil. We've used several different finishes. We've used tung oil. We've used mineral oil. But we found over time that the boiled linseed oil works best for us. It doesn't stain or anything, but it just brings out the natural beauty of the wood.
And longevity, it lasts a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we do care for them then with Howard Feed and Wax.
Mm-hmm. Do you do cutting boards?
Yeah, we do a lot of cutting boards, but for those we would use mineral oil then to make sure it's food safe.
Food grade. That's really cool. So is this your job, or do you have another job too?
Nope, this is my job. I graduated from high school about a year ago, so I'm probably going to continue in the business, maybe own it one day. Uh-huh. We'll see.
That's really cool. And are you a Mennonite family?
We are Mennonite. My parents were originally Amish. I personally was never Amish. They left the Amish church a little before I was born.
Being Mennonite, that's why you can have electricity, right?
Yeah, yep, that's correct.
Some definite functional benefit.
Yeah, yep. We have internet, computers, yep. So. I'm Isaiah Miller.
And the name of the company?
It's T-Berry Wood Products.
And you guys have a social media, definitely, right?
Yeah.
And a web?
Yeah, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, like I said, Etsy. Our website is tberrywoodproducts.com. So.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Indiana. Rock and roll.
Lauren Yoder, Silver Star Leather, Shipshewana, Indiana. Silver Star is my business name.
Talk to us about what you do with your leather crafting.
Basically, our biggest thing is belts and wallets and purses, and it's something that we started from a harness shop, which is a very traditional art for this area with our transportation and how we get around from point A to point B. There's a lot of other harness shops in the area that do exactly what we used to do, and we had the opportunity. My wife actually made a purse one day, and it wasn't a prize winner, but it opened the door to what we have now, and that's all we do now is fashion leather goods.
Talk to us a little bit about wallets, purses, what else?
The wallets are probably the best sellers in quantity-wise as far as overall, and the reason they sell so well is because they're all leather, inside and out, where most manufacturers, well, they're mostly imported, but most manufacturers use fabric to keep them thin. And our wallets are not a thin wallet. It's not extra heavy, but it is thick enough that it does stand the test of time. And that's where you can get a small piece of an exotic for not an unreasonable price. And have, you know, like Gator wallets, they run very reasonable here because we make them here and we sell them here. So that makes a big difference.
What are some of your most popular requested leather types?
Alligator. Uh-huh. Alligator and ostrich are the most popular ones. Alligator for men products, uh-huh. And then ostrich for ladies' purses. Actually, that's our most popular purse leather for exotics.
Do you ever get any requests from friends to go back and do some harness work for them?
I do. And I will occasionally do that. But the thing with the harness work, it's dirty. It's super heavy. So I always have to adjust my machines. The machines just, they don't accept that very well to go back to the harness work with. Because it's dirty, and you have to clean them afterwards, and you have to reset them.
You do a lot of retail, local business right here in the shop?
A lot of retail, a lot of local, not as much. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say 30% of my customers live within 30 miles of here, and that's considered fairly local. But we get the other 70% is definitely out of state or Indianapolis or, you know, hours away.
And then you sell wholesale to leather companies?
We do, mm-hmm. Yeah. We have quite a network of wholesale companies that buy our product and resell it. And then in that case, it's mostly belts and wallets. Our purses they're priced at a point where we can't afford to wholesale them. So we sell the purses in here exclusively.
You have modern equipment, but in many respects, it's still very much a traditional art.
It is. And kind of the way that works is for the area for our businesses, we create our own electricity, generate our own electricity. In this case, with leatherwork, it's mostly handwork, not a lot of electricity involved except for the lights.
So you really don't need much power?
I don't. I run everything off of solar. So we have a backup generator for the really cloudy weeks, but for the most part, it's all solar.
And are your sewing machines still treadle?
They're not. They're all electric. Yep.
So you need some source.
Absolutely. Yeah.
To learn more about your world, where would you direct them?
SilverStarLeather.com, and that directs you back here to us, which we're, as some people say it, in the boonies. We're about 5.5 miles north of Shipshewana, which is not far out of town, but the website will direct you here. My name is Lauren Yoder.
Lauren, thank you so much. What You're a pleasure.
Welcome. Good to meet you.
Yeah, and I'm going to order my custom belt.
Okay, I'll get it fixed up.
All right. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Indiana. We'll see you here. That saved a wretch
like me. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com.
Journeys of Discovery's executive producer is Randy Hare. Associate producers include Lori King, Molly Blaisdell, Katya Sengel, and Ruth Carlson. Our fall Cal Poly State University intern is Alexis Bowlby. The underbed music was performed by the Antrim Mennonite Church in Freeport, Ohio. The cuts included Just As I Am and Amazing Grace.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. And in fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So yes, please support your local NPR station.
Bright shining as the sun. Then when we first